Welcome in to the Autzen Audibles podcast. I'm Matt Prame, standalone podcast today. It's a mailbag and it's focused strictly on the Oregon basketball program and the men's side specifically. We're a couple of weeks removed now from the end of Oregon's season. We're recording this on the day that the national championship game between Purdue and UConn is played. The NCAA transfer portal is open and it is buzzing. There's a lot of big names. There's a lot of guys in the portal. We decided this is a good time. Let's open up the mailbag. Let's get a lot of questions in to discuss where Oregon basketball goes next. And there's going to be a lot of shifting, a lot of moving, and we'll discuss it all. So first up, Dr. Quacks asks, what are the positions that are going to be the targets for the transfer portal for the University of Oregon? And that's an easy one. That's a good one to start with. They have three seniors on this roster. Muhammad Diawara, who was a reserve big man that played limited minutes. He's out of eligibility. And then your two big ones, Nfali Dante, a senior, and Jermaine Cousinard, another senior. Cousinard operated as kind of your facilitator, your playmaker, your trigger man of the offense and also the defense. And Nfali Dante was your offensive enforcer, your defensive enforcer, your pillar of the culture of the Oregon program as well. Both players were dominant down the stretch, maybe the best stretch of two-man basketball we've seen from the Oregon Duck program in quite a while as they got to the NCAA tournament. So you look at the portal and where are the targets? So they don't have a player on its roster that's very similar to Nfali Dante from a body standpoint or from a game standpoint. Nate Biddle will be back, but he's not Nfali Dante, and it wouldn't be fair to Nate Biddle to ask him to replicate what Biddle did. There will be areas that they'll ask him to replicate, and he will be capable of doing that, but he's a different game. He's more of a face-up big man. He can shoot further out from the key than Nfali Dante can. Biddle is a talented player in his own right, but they're different. And then Ibrahim Traore is a freshman. He's the other big man that's coming on this roster, and then you have Kwame Evans. So you have two face-up four power forward slash centers in Biddle and Evans. You have an athletic but raw freshman coming in to play center, power forward. So you need to go out and you need to find some kind of low post option that can give you points down low, a back-to-the-basket game, someone who can block shots, someone who can alter shots, someone who can defend the key, and then most importantly, or I shouldn't say most importantly, but equally as important is rebound on both ends of the floor. And that's been reflected a little bit with the names that we know that Oregon's going after. They're trying to get Cliff Amarui from Rutgers, almost a double-double guy on the last couple of seasons for the Scarlet Knights, trying to get him for an official visit to Eugene. We know Terrace Reed from Michigan, their starting center, a sophomore, a guy that averaged about 8 and 8 per game, also blocked a shot per game. This is a guy that can shoot the three here and there. It's very similar to Kwame Evans, but he's got a little bit more of a face-up game than Dante did, but a very physical player, you know, a strong rebounder, a guy that can give you that back to the basket, low post option there. So those are kind of the two big names that we've heard Oregon attached to from a power forward slash center position standpoint. There's been other names that will enter the portal like today, as of today, Omar Ballo of Arizona entered the portal. He's from Mali, he knows Nfali Dante, they're friends. Maybe Dante gives a passing word. It would make sense for Omar Ballo from a play standpoint, a body standpoint, for Oregon to be interested. he checks the boxes, and it just turns out to be what, you know, what does Oregon want? Do they feel confident in other areas? Do they want to go in a different direction offensively, skill wise? But the portal will remain open until May 1st, and what happens between now and then will probably dictate between what they feel like with Reed, what they feel like with Amarui. Does a new name emerge? Will dictate what happens there, replacing Dante. And then the guard position, this one is where Oregon has a lot of options. I think the big one right now is Tony Perkins from Iowa. This is a guy that his frame and his skill set, very similar to that of Jermaine Cousinard, 6'4", a guy that averaged 4 assists a game, can hit the open three-pointer, is really good in the mid-range, is really good with the hostage dribble where he kind of holds the defender on a pick and roll behind him and forces the big man either to come out from the key for the lob to the big man, or he hits the mid-range jumper. A really proficient player in that regard. That's what made Cousinard so effective down the stretch for Oregon was he shot the ball well from three, yes. He created his own shot in tough situations, yes. But what really made things work was Cousinard ran the pick and roll really, really well with Dante. And how many lobs did we see? How many floaters did we see from Cousinard that went in? And they're looking at, it looks like that's kind of what they're looking to add next season. And Tony Perkins, he's one of the names to watch in that regard. We know Corin Johnson is from Washington. He's a sixth man Pac-12 player winner this past season. He's got Oregon in the top five, but with Keyshawn Bartholomew returning, maybe things transpire a different direction for Oregon now. Johnson and Bartholomew are very similar players. They're both 6'2". Do you want to have a third guard on their roster that's 6'2"? They kind of did that last season with Rigsby and Aquindo off the bench, and it just didn't really work in both areas on the floor for Oregon defensively and offensively. But it's probably safe to say Corin Johnson's a better player than Aquindo or Rigsby were last season. So maybe that entices things a little bit. We know Cade Tyson from Belmont, a 6'7" three-point shooter, is also in the mix. There's a couple other players that Oregon's involved in. They're going to be trickling them in through official visits here in the next couple weeks once the dead period opens up. But I think right now it's finding Dante and finding Cousinard replacements. And then after that, it's probably just enhancing the wings, finding some multi-positional players. And that's one of the biggest things that was missing from Oregon's roster at the end of the year. They didn't have a lot of guys that could play power forward, small forward, shooting guard, or point guard, shooting guard, small forward, power forward. You know, it's hard to find those guys, but when you look at the great teams under Dana Altman and his 14 years with the Ducks, every one of their good teams has multi-position players that have been really, really good. Paul White was a guy that could give you minutes at center, power forward, and small forward. And in a pinch, he could guard shooting guards. And, you know, obviously they wouldn't stack him up against shooting guards every possession down, but they would play the 2-3 zone. And if it matched up, or if they rotated on every screen and they switched in every move, Paul White got matched up on a shooting guard, in a one-off situation, they weren't going to be too worried about that. Dylan Brooks and Elgin Cook, obviously together when they won the Pac-12 and they were a one seed. And then obviously the next year with Dylan Brooks, both those guys could play power forward, center, small forward, shooting guard. They could guard point guards. Obviously the center matchup made it a little difficult depending on the player, but those are the types of guys Oregon lacks. And they didn't have a lot of them that could, like a Shakur Justin a couple of years ago, or a Eugene Amarui, or an LJ Figueroa, guys that you could say they can play three positions. And when you have guys that can play three positions, that expands your bench out, gives you extra rotation combinations without adding an extra roster player. And it allows teams to play with seven or eight guys because of the number of combinations that you can trot out there in lineups, is massive, and they lacked that. So I think it's finding a big man, finding a guard that can be a kind of a go-to scorer, and then go out and add some multi-positional players, some guys that give you some flexibility to the mix. It wouldn't surprise me if they look to add 3 to 4 players in the portal, maybe 5. Next question kind of plays into that is TJ O'Connor asking, what role could Mookie Cook have next season for Oregon? And Mookie Cook was supposed to be one of those multi-positional players for Oregon this season. Unfortunately for him, he only played 5 games due to an injury prior to his arrival at Oregon. His rehab didn't go well. He tried to play through it. It just wasn't going to happen, so they shut him down. They redshirted him. He'll be a redshirt freshman next season. Mookie Cook's role next year will be just that. He will be a multi-positional guy that can give you minutes at the power forward spot. He can guard small forwards. He can guard shooting guards, and he can guard point guards. He will be one of those guys at the top of the press trying to wreak havoc, or he could be at the back end of the press and trying to intercept the skip passes that go from, you know, one corner of the backcourt to the front court of the opponent, and, you know, trying to catch those long passes and speeding up the game, or trapping at the half court line. We know he'll be able to guard power forwards. He's got a really long wingspan. He's a lot bigger than you would anticipate. So I think next season he'll be a position versatility guy, someone that can give you minutes on a whole bunch of different positions, hit the occasional jumper, make the occasional corner three-pointer, be the athletic guy that attacks the rim for either dump-off passes or dunks or layups, and then rebound and defend. A multi-positional guy. I don't think it's a fair expectation to look to Mookie Cook and say, you need to be a starter next season. He hasn't played ball by the time next season rolls around in about 18 months and consistent ball. So finding a way off the bench to make an impact in 10 to 15 minutes a game and be that kind of energy defensive spark plug that we saw for a very brief moment up in Washington when they went and swept Washington and Washington State. Cato Duck asks, what are the coaching staff rules and how could Stubblefield and maybe Josh Jamison be added to the current staff? Well, first of all, if you're unaware, Josh Jamison was an assistant coach at Louisville. He previously at Oregon, before he went to Louisville, he was the director of operations for a long time under Ernie Kent. And then he stayed on at Dana Altman, was hired, and he's been a longtime Oregon staffer, almost a lifer. And then Stubblefield was let go as the head coach at DePaul midseason, and he previously spent time as one of Oregon's bench assistant coaches and has a long history with Dana Altman. Now, first of all, we've reported on DuckTerritory.com. We believe Stubblefield is all but done to Oregon. He will return in some capacity. Jamison, we've not heard it definitively. We have heard that, yes, that they are trying to make room to get him on staff, but that one will take some more work. We'll see if it happens. But how could they add these two guys to the coaching staff, and what would the benefits of this be? Think of it in football. How many times do we see analysts being hired? How many times do we see director of recruiting or some kind of roster management GM type of role? That side of coaching in college football is coming to basketball. It's already started. Programs across the country are expanding their coaching staffs. Oregon has had large staffs, and right now frequently they've had a smaller end of it. They have an open position too. The NCAA does, ahead of this past season, they did change some rules. They added 2 extra assistant coaches to be able to help coach on the court. They're not allowed to go off campus and recruit, but they are able to be on staff, be involved in off-season skill development, be involved in game prep and game practices. And Oregon operated. They weren't able to fill that position before the start of the season. They had one they had one open spot when the year opened. So they've got an open spot. So that could be exactly where Stubblefield slides right in. Now, what would the official title be? Who knows? You know, I would imagine Oregon would want him to have one of the three assistant coaching positions so that he could go out and recruit. He's landed multiple five-star guys to Oregon. He's landed multiple four-star guys to Oregon. He's found diamonds in the rough type players. You probably would want him being able to be out on the road, evaluating, making in-home visits, spending time with AAU and high school coaches to talk about the Oregon program should he come to Oregon. We think it's pretty much done. So that would require one of their current assistants, whether it's Brian Fish or Mike Menega or Lewis Rowe, to bump down to a non-recruiting assistant coach position. Now, they can still recruit on campus, but they can't go out on the road. And then from there, the benefits are just exponential. You'd be allowed to have your head coach, your three assistants, your three GAs, and then two like analysts be able to be on the floor. And well, by filling that spot, all of a sudden now, or even adding Josh Jamison to the mix, now all of a sudden you can go out and you can tell Stubblefield and Menega to go hit the road to recruit on a Monday, Tuesday period before Oregon leaves town on Wednesday for a game on Thursday and a game on Saturday. Well, those coaches could be gone on Monday and Tuesday, and yet you still have your full allotment of coaches on the court helping the team prepare for the upcoming game. You're being able to do multiple jobs now at one time. And that's going to be the importance this offseason for Dana Altman and the Oregon men's program to expand its staff, grow its staff, and be able to add recruiting talent and being able to add some skill development talent, which we heard that, you know, they're looking into both areas. And some coaches out there, Stubblefield would solve both areas, skill and recruiting, and other coaches that we've heard about, you know, could be coming on as an analyst role to help with game prep or to help with self-scout or to help with, you know, scouting the opponents far out from the current game or you know, in the offseason, what have you. So that's going to be the importance there with the rules, playing within the rules, coaching within the rules, and what those guys could have. I expect basically everyone on staff to be back that's currently here. So what's happening is it's growing. They're not going to lose a coach. You don't say never, but you know, maybe things do change with someone or some people on staff. But for the most part right now, you know, early April, it sounds like everyone on staff will be back and they're going to be looking to add now for the first time in a while. All right, next up here, Riddick One asks Kwame Evans intel. He was, if you're unfamiliar, he was very hit or miss about Oregon's, if he was going to return to Oregon for his sophomore season. And I think this story maybe got a little blown up more than it really was, because he answered, "I don't know. I wish I could tell you, but I don't know." And I think that was genuine. He said he loved his time at Oregon. He had a good experience his freshman season. He acknowledged he didn't play very well down the stretch. He acknowledged he never shot the ball as poorly as he did in high school, as he did this season at Oregon. So he did note that, you know, there are areas to improve, but overall his experience was good, but he didn't know what to do. Cause look, this is a really weak NBA draft class, and the former five-star prospect was potentially able to maybe put his name into the draft and could potentially hear his name called late second round, mid second round. He's a former five-star athlete. NBA teams are intrigued with him. But ultimately, we've heard, and he's not publicly announced this. I don't know if we even will get a public announcement from him. But we've heard that Kwame Evans is enrolled in classes for spring term. He intends to be on Oregon's roster next season. He knows there's areas to improve. He also knows he's in a really good position for playing time, for a role within the Ducks, and a skill development as well. So Kwame Evans, plus Mookie Cook, plus Jackson Shellstead, all should be back for Oregon next season. And to tap into that, we've also seen Brandon Rigsby transfer out. We know Nate Biddle has said he's back. We know Keyshawn Barthelemy has said he's back. We know Jadrian Tracy has said he is back as well. And really, the lone player left that we're waiting to hear one way or the other is going to be Kario Aquindo. And what does that senior do? Beginning of the year, he was pretty dead set on this being his last season of college basketball. A guy that was a two-year starter at Georgia before coming to Oregon. But his third year of college athletics did not go probably as he anticipated, probably as Oregon anticipated. He was too inconsistent defensively. He saw improvements offensively, but his defensive issues became very glaring and his minutes kind of shrunk a little bit. And now he said, you know, he'll make a decision after the season was over. He'll go home. He'll talk with his folks, make a decision of what happens. But if it comes back to Oregon, his role will probably change. And will he be okay with that? That's the question that we have. We don't know the answer to that right at this moment. All right. Another question here from Artrades. How will Oregon stack up in the Big Ten next season? Well, as its current format, you know, like I truly think that if they're healthy, a rotation of Biddle, Kwame, Jadrian Tracy, with Barthelemy and Shellstead as your starting lineup, and then you've got Zendrick Lindsey, a JUCO potential All-American coming in. You've got Mookie Cook. You've got Ibrahim Traore coming in. You know, I feel like this is a group that, even if you throw in Kario Aquindo, it's a team that should be tournament caliber. Now, I'm not saying that they're going to be a top five seed or even an 8-9 seed, or they're going to win a game in the tournament. But that's a roster that Dane Altman should be able to get to the NCAA tournament. You play 11 non-conference games. You think that that lineup right there should be good enough to the point where they could get 8, 9, 10 wins in non-conference. And then playing in the Big Ten, you still have some teams that aren't going to be good. You're still going to play USC twice. Okay, they're not going to be good next season, more than likely. You look at the program and say, okay, well, USC's going to be – it's probably going to be a down year. They're probably going to take a step back from where they've been the last 3 or 4 years. You can win one or two of those games. Washington's got a new head coach. We'll see what happens there. But Oregon already swept them. They're going to be a better program already. That's one or two more wins right there. You get UCLA at home. That's a program that's going through some changes. We'll see what happens with them. But, you know, the reality is you should be able to win one or two of those games as well. Now we're talking 3 to 5 wins already for Oregon next season. And then, you know, can you win? That's 6 games right there from West Coast Pac Big Ten teams. Can you find a way to win 7 or 8 more games, 9 more games, 10 more games? If you do that, home and away, like, now all of a sudden you're talking about a team that's 18-13. That's tournament quality. And the quality of opponent that Oregon will play in the Big Ten, you know, that's a team that can be in the tournament. And now the job is make the roster better so that you can compete for a Big Ten championship, so you can compete for a top seed in the NCAA tournament. But I think the expectation is next year, with its current roster as it is, like, they should still be a team that's fighting for the tournament and a team that can probably win right now 7 to 11 games in the Big Ten, 12 games in the Big Ten out of a 20-game season. And if you win 12 games, you're probably going to be in the upper half of the conference. You're going to be right around that 6 or 7 seed. I think, depending on portal ads, you know, you could look at Oregon and say they probably should be a team that's in the top third of the conference. And if you're in the top third, you're competing for the Big Ten championship. They're going to have one of the better coaches in the conference. They're going to have one of the better point guards in the conference. They're going to have a roster that features multiple five-star players, multiple top 100 recruits. They're going to be in the mix for some big portal ads. We know they're in the mix for some big portal ads. So, you know, next season should be another year where the expectation is you compete for the Big Ten championship and you compete for a good seed in the NCAA tournament. All right, we got one last question that was sent in from Twitter from @theduck12 and then a bunch of other numbers and letters, asking a question about how did the season this past year kind of shape what we think of Oregon basketball next year, or what we think of this season for Oregon. Excuse me, for how this year has gone. And I think ultimately, like, it's going to be a what if. What if this Oregon men's basketball team stayed healthy, didn't have the injuries that they dealt with that so many teams didn't have to deal with? Because we saw at the end of the year, even with a limited bench, once Dante and Cousinard got healthy and got some rhythm on the floor together, got used to playing with one another, when Shelstead kind of figured out the role and how he was going to play within the conference, and we saw Kwame Evans, JJ and Tracy came on late as well. Once guys kind of figured out how to play together, they were really good, to the point where we were expecting maybe a team that on paper probably shouldn't beat a Creighton team. And in reality, after watching them play, you're like, yeah, Oregon gave that game away. They should have won. They should have made it to the Sweet 16. They should have played Tennessee in Detroit for the right to get to face off against Purdue. It will ultimately be a what if, because if you throw in a Barthelemy, or if you throw in a Nate Biddle, or if you throw in a Mookie Cook onto that roster at the end of the season, do they lose to Creighton? Probably not. And ultimately, that's going to be the, you know, the what if. They achieved great things. They were able to fight their way through adversity, get to the NCAA tournament, win a game in the tournament, get to the second round. But ultimately, you're going to go, there could have been a lot more if they didn't. And none of it's their fault. You can't fault players for getting hurt or getting sick or what have you. But it's going to be a what if of it was a special turnaround. But what if they never had to turn things around? What if they were able to stay healthy? How good could they really have become? All right, we got one more question that was also submitted on duckterritory.com by Atlanta Duck. Schedule for next year with regards to the Big Ten and non-conference. When are dates for the conference tournament going to be announced? I've asked that multiple times. No one really knows definitively when it happens. I've heard Brooklyn is a location for the Big Ten tournament. I've heard Chicago is a location for the Big Ten tournament. Indianapolis is a location for the Big Ten tournament. I imagine they'll look out west towards Vegas, but probably not this coming season. They'll probably keep it kind of neutral for everybody in the conference from its original members. Wouldn't surprise me if it's Chicago or Indianapolis. It's recently been in Minnesota. We know it's previously been in DC. It's previously been in Brooklyn. But those tournaments have not drawn very well. And with the team playing for the national championship, maybe even winning it in Purdue this season, we'll probably see something centralized for majority of the players to kind of celebrate next season as a cap off. As for non-conference, Dan Altman's talked a lot about how he wants to play out west. We know they're involved in a tournament in Las Vegas to open the season that's heavily impacted by NIL. An organization is willing to pay up front $1 million per team to come out, plus provide travel, plus provide lodging, plus provide food. And then the winning team gets an additional $1 million in NIL that goes strictly to the players. Coaches don't get this. It's all players. So we know Oregon's involved in that discussion. Does that get finalized? We know Oregon wants to play Oregon State once next season. Dana Altman would like that game to be at home, but we'll see what happens. Do they also play Washington State, or do they travel down to the Bay Area or bring up from the Bay Area Cal and Stanford, who are now in the ACC? It wouldn't surprise me if Oregon maybe tries to fly south to Arizona or Arizona State if one of those two teams wants to play one game, or maybe they play up in Eugene. Dane Altman says he'd like to keep playing the teams from the Pac-12 conference if they can make it work, but he definitively knows his schedule is going to be heavily based on the West Coast. He does not want to travel long distances on a frequent basis in non-con because of what they're going to have to do in conference play joining the Big Ten. All right, it's going to do it for us here on the standalone edition of the Odds and Audibles podcast from Mailbag. Continue to send in mailbag questions. We'll do these more regularly throughout the offseason. Discussing Oregon basketball, we're going to try and talk Oregon basketball more year round now. We'll see how it goes, see what happens, but that's going to be one of our goals for this offseason, is to keep the men's basketball program. We'll get Eric to do some women's stuff as well once we kind of finalize the roster there as well. So a lot more basketball stuff coming this offseason. But until the next one, you've been listening to the Odds and Audibles podcast.